Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 79 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The second podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my wonderful hostess, Aaron Pallett. How are you doing, Aaron?
Okay, so I've got some rants stored up in me. I will try to keep them focused on the subject at hand. But if I start to go off topic, just kick me. Because there's been a lot of BS going on in the world right now, and I don't even know where to begin. So, you know, I mean, there's the shooting in California, the shooting in Oklahoma, there's the, I don't even know what to call it, the bad thing that's going on in Hong Kong. I mean, I really don't know how to describe it without descending into profanity.
Civil unrest?
Those are words that would describe it, but it does the situation a horrible disservice.
I concur.
But yeah, you don't want to get me started on that. I am having a day. I am sort of vacillating between I don't want to do anything because I'm not feeling well, but apparently I have very strong feelings about some things. So, yeah. Instead of winding me up and having me go off topic, how about we just, I don't know, race towards the main topic? Although, I should ask, how are you doing, Weird?
I'm doing relatively well. It's with New England, the weather's turning crappy. It's just cold and damp and awful, and it's been snowing and ugh. So yeah, winter appears to have come a little bit early to us in New England, like so early that like half the trees still have their leaves. They've just been like frozen onto the tree. And I'm really terrified of what happens when we get our first like real snowstorm, if they're just going to fall over. Cause we just had a big storm that went through and a whole bunch of trees came down in town. And like, I actually spent this weekend chopping one of them up, and so
was it a wicked nor'easter?
It was indeed a wicked nor'easter, though they also called it like an arctic. No, this wasn't the arctic blast. I can't remember what. I think they called it a bomb cyclone.
Bomb cyclone.
Yeah, it's one of those. Stop making up terms. Like, weather is scary and interesting as it is. You don't need to make up terms. But yeah, so there was the nor'easter that Hollywood was calling it a bomb cyclone. Nor'easter 2, the bomb cyclone. Yeah, no, we just been getting like a bunch of like wintry air in from the north. I mean, I guess you guys are feeling it all the way down in Florida too. And
the past 2 days, it was in the 50s. It was cold. It wasn't quite as cold as it was up in DC, but it was pretty darn cold. And then today it warmed up and it was 68. Oh. So I only needed sweats. That was nice.
But yeah, but we had just this big shock. It's one of those, like, my lawnmower is sitting in the garage just waiting for the leaves to fall, and I'm just going to run the lawnmower over the leaves and just chop them all up, and it just makes it easier. And that'll also burn up all the fuel in the lawnmower, so it won't turn to varnish with the freeze-thaw cycles, but it's already freezing and thawing, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do.
I'm totally bored of talking about weather. Anything else, please?
I hear you. So, yeah, so that's that. And just running around with my daughter and her being crazy. That's my week. Nothing super duper interesting besides all the interesting people that I've been interacting with for ACP. We got some more interviews. Hooray. I want to dive into this main topic because it was one of those, like, it's something everyone was talking about. And I found, again, me being the perpetual Pollyanna, I really wanted to bring this in. I'm sure you've all heard, I mean, it's old news at this point in time, but the Supreme Court issued a ruling on the Remington versus Soto case, which is the Connecticut case of the Sandy Hook families are trying to sue Remington by, you know, Bushmaster by way of Remington for the Sandy Hook killings. And essentially they are trying an end run around PLACA, the Protection of Lawful and Commerce Arms Act, by saying, no, this isn't about us suing Remington for their product being misused by a criminal, but us suing Remington for them doing misleading advertisements that encouraged the misuse of their product by a criminal. And essentially, Remington was going all the way up to the Supreme, went all the way up to the highest court in the, no, this counts under PLACA. And essentially, I think they've ruled that, no, it doesn't. This is a correct run around PLACA. And so everyone's going, oh, this is terrible. This is shooting a massive hole in PLACA. And to be fair, that is a valid way to look at it. And certainly the idea of suing a company because their advertising is misleading seems really, really terrifying, given that every company's advertising is misleading. I mean, the words "professional driver on a closed course, do not attempt" on every single car commercial you've ever seen should just tell you all about it. Is, we are going to show you your car. Under no circumstance do you, if you buy one of these cars, do you ever do any of this crap.
So you've talked a lot about the advertising, but you haven't said what this evil, wicked, no good advertising is.
I believe everything I've seen on it is the goofy Bushmaster rifle ads that, if you have a subscription to any gun magazine or pick one up at your drugstore when you're bored, the stuff like, oh, your man card is now renewed, and what is it like?
Okay, well, looking at the link you linked, okay, it says the advertising in question was Bushmaster's military theme to its advertising, and then it got some quotes. When you need to perform under pressure, Bushmaster delivers. Opposition, bow down, etc. And apparently the case is somehow claiming that these words encourage people to commit crimes, murder other people. What?
Yeah. And I'll note that the link in the show notes is to Dave Hardy's blog of Arms and the Law. I mean, Dave Hardy is an absolutely incredible Second Amendment legal scholar. And his big takeaway, I'll just cut to the punchline, is what he is pointing out is that the Supremes really didn't give a whole lot of information on why they refused to dismiss the case. They just said that they aren't going to do that. But the case still needs to go on. And essentially, the way they're framing it up, they are going to make it very, very difficult, because
who's they?
The Newtown families.
Okay.
Are going to have a very, very difficult time, because what they're going to have to do for the case that they're presenting is they are going to have to say that the killer was indeed reading Remington's advertisements for the Bushmaster AR-15. And so therefore that was the reason why, when he murdered his mother, he decided to take that gun specifically to that school. And I gotta say, that's gonna be pretty, pretty tricky to prove.
Yeah. I mean, isn't Lanza dead?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought. So they're going to have to speculate as to the mindset of a dead man who was some degree of mentally impaired at the time. Because, well, not to go too far off into the weeds, but, well, well-adjusted people don't murder children. Plus, there's a history of him having psychological issues. So,
and also, when you just cook the case down, is, as far as I know, he had no connection to this school whatsoever, except that it was within driving distance to his house. This was not his school that he went to. It wasn't like he was bullied at this school, or he knew some of the kids at this school, or some of the teachers, or all of that. There was some speculation at the beginning of when it was all going down, and like every mass shooting with the 24-hour news coverage, most of it wasn't true. I think he just went to a school because he wanted to shoot up a school. And that's, why would you want to do that?
Yeah, so it's not quite as simplistic as, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm going to show that the defendant who stripped down naked and rubbed whipped cream all over his body, did so as a deeply ironic statement about the dairy industry, but it's kind of close. You know, it's okay, the guy is crazy. The guy is crazy for these documented reasons, but we're going to prove that he did what he did through a chain of logic, and it's all the fault of advertising. I mean, yeah, it's going to be difficult for them to prove this, but if they do, because I mean, just looking at the advertising is so vague. This will have what is known as a chilling effect on the ad industry, and I'm not sure what's going to happen because, okay, and I've only got the two things that are quoted in Dave Hardy's blog, because honestly, it's been that kind of a day. I haven't done research, but okay, when you need to perform under pressure, Bushmaster delivers. That is your typical hyperbolic, our product is better than every other product. You should buy our product because it's better. And then there's opposition bow down, trash talking. This is literally the basis of every form of advertising ever. And I think even if it wins in this case, it'll get appealed and it'll get shut down simply because to do otherwise is to basically open up every single manufacturer who advertises to these types of lawsuits. And, well, I don't know if there are judges out there who really care about devastating the economy, but surely there's one somewhere. Because, oh my God, can you imagine the lawsuits against cars? My car, you know, it doesn't even have to be someone who committed vehicular homicide, although there are those, but just the whole, this person would not have done this horrible wreck if he hadn't been speeding. And, you know, the Corvette Corporation, whoever the heck makes them, you know, they're constantly talking about how fast they are, and, you know, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, and, you know, if you just hadn't mentioned how fast it went, then my client wouldn't have sped, and this wouldn't have happened, and
Or you could say I was drunk driving because Budweiser beer ads said that drinking Budweiser will make me good at sex, and it wasn't working yet, so I obviously didn't get the dose right.
Or I was on my way to get sex. Or yes. Yeah, it's.
And Aaron, you have not seen these ads?
I have not seen what ads?
The Bushmaster ads?
No.
I just put a link up for you to click on in the or. And I'm not going to bother putting this particular article in there, but
thank you so much for linking to HuffPo.
Yeah, I personally got HuffPo. I just did a Google image search. That's all you need to do for folks at home. It's not going to be in the show notes because it's HuffPo.
Consider your man card reissued. And big deal.
It's a big white page, and it has there the Bushmaster AR-15 in one corner, and these block letters. And then down in the corner, you got the little Bushmaster logo with the little AR-15 embossed on it. And it's mostly dead space. And yeah, there's nothing military about it. I mean, it's not even like Springfield Armory had a more poignant ad with their like dude in military fatigues with an M1A like crawling through a mud hole.
I mean, in order for this case to actually succeed on its barefaced merits, the ads would have to be something like, Bushmaster, good for murdering lots of kids.
Yeah, the old Jackie Brown, AK-47, when you got to kill everybody in the room.
Yeah, and, you know, at this point, I don't even think they are trying to win. I think this is just a case of the process is the punishment. And if they win, so much the better. But either way, they're costing the company money.
I mean, the whole Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act came up specifically for this reason, was that as the Clinton administration was leveling these lawsuits against gun companies because their guns were being misused, they did not win a single one. There were some cases where the company decided to settle out of court and to just make it go away. And there were many cases, such as actually Bushmaster itself was actually, I know people on the legal team defending Bushmaster for it was the DC sniper case. And yeah, they Bushmaster won that one. But I know the some of the legal team that was on that, the team of lawyers that all are being billed by the hour defending Bushmaster. The whole point was it's going to, I mean, Lucky Gunner, it cost them like $250,000 just to bring a case to the point of it being dismissed. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't even start. The battle didn't even begin. This never happened. And they lost $250,000. Mm-hmm. And that's gone. Like it went away. And that was the whole point, is the, you just keep leveling these awful cases against the gun companies. You don't have to win. You just file the cases. They have to set up a defense, because if they just sit there and take it, they might lose. And so, yeah, that was the whole point. So this does add that scary angle on the fact that now people can start leveling goofy cases. Of course, at the same time, maybe it will encourage people to say, hey, maybe you shouldn't do that, because this is not mature behavior. So if we didn't think you needed a law, but I guess we're going to need to write a law.
So like I said 5 minutes ago, the process is the punishment.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely the case.
So speaking of bad ideas and the process is the punishment and all sorts of other crap, you have another audio fisk. Oh boy, you've got part one of an audio fisk. You've got part one of an MSNBC audio fisk. Oh my god, I can barely contain myself.
It's an old one too. It's one of those I was looking at it and go, oh my god. I'm gonna tie it in. I don't want to throw it away.
I've done all this work fisking it. By golly, I'm gonna make a use out of it somehow.
Exactly. And so I'm gonna reframe this. This is the MSNBC doing a love kiss of a story on Michael Bloomberg's, essentially, he personally funded this whole nationwide protest during the summer recess, saying everyone come back and pass gun control laws or else.
And or else what?
Yeah, let's we could just
oh that's part two coming next
no,
week.
No, we can chuckle. Let's not bury the lead. Let's listen to the fisk first, and then we can neener neener. After the mass murders in Texas and Ohio, the antis have now the prerequisite blood to conduct their ghoulish ritual to invoke gun control. They're talking about background checks, which both the killers passed, red flag laws, and assault weapons bans. And Stephanie Rule on MSNBC is going to bring us some solid, unbiased reporting.
The debate over gun control intensifying this weekend, with gun safety activists not backing down, even as lawmakers are continuing their August recess.
So nothing she said here was true. Nothing. There hasn't been a debate on gun control since the 1990s. The pro-gun side won that debate. And since then, the anti-gun side has simply done all they can to push their agenda on an ignorant public. You can clearly see this in the one-sided coverage from this alleged news agency. The subject of this report are not gun safety activists. A gun safety activist is people like the volunteers from Operation Blazing Sword, who are available to teach people who are ignorant on guns how to use them safely, without judgment or cost to them. The people who held these rallies are spokespeople for the corporate anti-gun lobby owned by Michael Bloomberg. And these anti-gun lobbyists back down constantly. They're like vampires who can only come out at night, except these ghouls only come out after there's been a tragic loss of life. They do this because they lost the gun control debate. And they see their only opportunity to push an agenda that won't improve public safety is to push it when emotions are high and tempers are hot. Level-headed people don't support gun control, and they know it. But lawmakers are on recess, and despite the cries for them to return to session early, they chose not to. So at least Ms. Rule got that right.
The groups Every Town for Gun Safety and Moms Demand Action, holding rallies in all 50 states, very clearly warning lawmakers if they do not take action on guns, they'll be voted out.
Two interesting facts. Number one, Moms Demand Action is a division of Every Town, which is wholly owned and operated by Michael Bloomberg.
So while they make it appear as if this is a massive groundswell, this is actually just the work of one man who has supported every anti-gun piece of legislation that's ever been proposed. Number two, this was the rallying cry in the 2018 midterm elections that the Democrats called the Blue Wave. And while control of the House of Representatives did switch parties, this is pretty much how every midterm election has gone. When a president from one party is elected, the midterms generally tend to favor the other party. Also, when gun control activists said this, they were lying. I know this because when Michael Bloomberg doled out his support for anti-gun candidates who had pledged their allegiance to him, he did it with ads for abortion and reproductive rights. That's right, an anti-gun corporation took extra effort to keep gun control out of politics of the midterm election. And we all know why.
This as authorities arrested a man in Ohio on Friday, this man on your screen, after he posted a video on social media that showed him firing a gun and referencing a local Jewish community center.
Note that she just gave a perfect example of why we don't need red flag laws. If someone has guns and makes threats, that's a crime. You can arrest somebody for that. You could send them to a facility for mental evaluations. If in fact they're a dangerous person, they can be committed and kept safely away from society until they're deemed safe to re-enter it. And upon their release, they will no longer be able to legally possess guns. Meanwhile, red flag laws lock up the guns and leave the dangerous, crazy person free to do whatever they want. Or they violate the sanctity of a suicidal person's home, take their possessions, and leave them alone in a house with knives, poison, and ropes. Or let them wander freely on the streets to contemplate the trucks and buses they can throw themselves under. Red flag laws are a prime example of anti-gun law. It has zero concern for public safety, human rights, or even common sense. But it locks up the guns. Perfect! Also, I'm glad to see that finally, in the wake of these shootings, the police are doing their job. It seems that these killers fall into two general categories. One group are people like the jerks from Columbine, Virginia Tech, the shooting of Congresswoman Giffords, or the jerk from Broward County. Bad actors with multiple contacts with law enforcement that were escalating in clearly a dangerous direction. Or people like the shooters in Aurora, Colorado, the Isla Vista killer, the terrorist from San Bernardino, or the Charleston, South Carolina killer, among others. Odd ducks who had kept their nose relatively clean, but were telling people about their plans. In all of these cases, law enforcement had an opportunity to act and chose not to. The solution isn't new laws, but simply to use laws we already have. But since the laws we already have target the dangerous individuals and are harder to abuse, they're no good for the antis.
This man reportedly had multiple semi-automatic weapons and body armor in the privacy of his own home.
Multiple semi-automatic weapons and body armor? Jeez. That was a pretty low bar to clear to be dangerous. Good thing the legal system doesn't work that way. And we can clearly see why the antis want to change the laws so they can make us all dangerous criminals.
And across America, the fear is still there. A new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll finds that 55% of Americans are worried that the United States will experience another mass shooting or a white nationalist attack.
I mean, there's no time limit on this. Do you think that there'll be another mass shooting in the United States between now and forever? Of course. Also, what's with the white nationalist bit? As in any attack by white nationalists? Or white nationalist gun attacks? Because this report's only talking about guns. Is there only one kind that we need to be concerned about? Now they cut to our wonderful pro-gun president.
That they have bipartisan committees working on background checks and various other things, and we'll see. I don't want people to forget that this is a mental health problem. I don't want them to forget that, because it is. It's a mental health problem.
Look, yeah, anybody who would commit mass murder is a nut. Normal people wouldn't do that. But it's not like they're any particular kind of nut who does this. It's not like there's a shared disorder that the spree killers have. The closest thing we have is they generally let the public know one way or another what they plan on doing well before they actually do it. So really, it's a law enforcement problem, not a mental health one. Now the guest enters. New Jersey Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill.
You're now calling for an assault weapon ban. Why is that? Because in the past, we couldn't even get background checks done.
It's a fair question, as Americans aren't super concerned with background checks. We're really more concerned with punitive taxation of our rights and a backdoor gun registration, which is what the Bloomberg model for background checks are. If I could log into an app on my phone and run a background check on anybody willing to give me their vital statistics, I'd be all in favor of mandatory background checks. Hell, look at any report where an anti-gun reporter goes to a gun show and attempts to buy a gun with no questions asked. They always get asked to see a valid ID. Why? Because that's an easy way to make sure you're selling to a state resident. Many sellers will only sell to strangers who have a concealed weapons permit, because they don't issue those to people who can't legally own guns. If we could do background checks as cheaply and easily as that, we totally would. But the moment you require a licensed dealer, whose license can be revoked for political reasons, as the Clinton crackdown showed us, and fees for their time, and we need make, model, and serial numbers in this equation, nope, that's taxation of a right and creating an illegal registry. So yeah, that's the easy one. And she also wants to ban the most popular firearms in the country. Jeez, who's going to support that crap?
Well, we still haven't gotten background checks since, Stephanie. So while I am calling for an assault weapons ban, because Jason Crow, a former Army Ranger, and I'm a former Navy helicopter pilot, we both know that assault weapons are weapons of war. They're designed to kill as many people in as short a time as possible.
Wait, what? Okay, I get when a silver spoon moron like Joe Biden, who's never had a real job his entire life, talks about shooting shotguns in the air.
Jill, if there's ever a problem, just walk out on the balcony here, or walk out, put that double barrel shotgun and fire two blasts outside the house.
I get Joe. He isn't very bright and he has no life experience to go with. But an Army Ranger and a Navy helicopter pilot? Do the Rangers carry AR-15s? Were there civilian guns on her helicopter? According to Wikipedia, she was piloting Sea King helicopters, which is a sub hunter, and it drops torpedoes. Also, I have to assume the Navy might have mentioned to her that the Sea King is capable of deploying the B-57 nuclear depth charge. Yeah, a nuclear depth charge. Now, those are weapons of war. And when we're talking about stuff like that, a semi-auto rifle, no matter how scary it may look, really pales in comparison. And if it's some sort of weapon of mass murder, why have bombs and missiles and artillery, or even full auto carbines? Just issue every soldier with a semi-auto AR from the lowest bidder. Every war will be won in an hour. Seriously, they're such killing machines, why do we give them to cops? Hell, if they're such weapons of mass destruction, why do they suck at it? It's not like my or your rifles have killed anybody. Congresswoman Sherrill and Congressman Crow are lying. And that's really disgusting coming from officers of the armed forces. Okay, I'm running long. I'll take on the rest of this interview next week. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
Oh, all right, Aaron. You said it before we went in. Yeah, come back and pass gun control laws or else. Yeah, literally, or else what? Not only did they not come back into recess, they did not introduce any gun control rules. I also note that Donald Trump didn't introduce any of the stuff that he was talking about either. Again, not saying I trust him, but I'm happy to see that it didn't happen. And and meanwhile, Beto O'Rourke's gone and Michael Bloomberg's trying to enter into the race.
And Kamala Harris is somewhere at what, 3%?
I mean,
if
again,
that.
I'm always like looking. It was like when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was like so sick and just gone. It's just one of those, like, every time is one of those, like, have they found her and I just haven't heard it yet? Has Kamala Harris dropped out yet? She is definitely the Schrodinger's cat of political candidates. Like, she's on borrowed time. She's just, at what point in time is she going to realize it?
So one thing that I saw that really confused me, because I kept hearing about how Elizabeth Warren was the chosen one for the DNC, and it may still happen because of superdelegates, but I remember hearing that, and I'm going to butcher his name, but Buttigieg, he was in the lead, and Warren and Bernie and maybe someone else were like tied, and I was really, really surprised to hear that Buttigieg was doing so well. Because I haven't heard anything from him. Now, admittedly, I'm not a political junkie like you. I don't follow these things, but I'm constantly hearing from or about Bernie. I'm constantly hearing from or about Warren. When Beto was in, I was hearing from or about him. I literally can't think of a single thing I have heard about or from Buttigieg since this started.
I think he's kind of in the, like, Tulsi Gabbard, Andrew Yang campaign, where they're the, you know, camp where they're just getting squashed by that. I mean, I know, I believe some, like, this, when there's a negative story to run about Mayor Pete, because I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his name, because, like, I mean, come on. What do you expect, Mayor Pete? Who do you think I am? I can't pronounce that. And let's be honest. I mean, just the DNC's running against you. You're not going to make it. You're not going to make it. I'm sorry, man. I appreciate your service. But yeah, I think they keep getting, every time I hear about him in the news, it is like a negative story. There was some sort of police scandal. I mean, I really don't even care. They haven't been any like major events, you know, like, you know, having secure emails on a server in your bathroom in the basement. And again, that was the nominee. I don't have good feelings about him. And the other one to talk about, though, is Andrew Yang. Andrew Yang, for those of you libertarians out there, Andrew Yang is the Ron Paul of the DNC.
Okay.
Literally, I was, of course, I do the audio fisc, so I'm subscribed to all of the YouTube channels for all of the anti-gun groups. And the Brady campaign has been doing these, like, profiles of all the anti-gun candidates. And, you know, Beto O'Rourke is, you know, front and center. And, you know, just they're most of them are there. With the exception of there's no Tulsi Gabbard and there's no Andrew Yang. There might be a couple more that I'm missing. There's like 30 candidates out there still. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, the comment section is filled with, what are you guys doing not giving Andrew Yang the time? He hates guns too.
That
homophobic troll that I allude to frequently. Oh yeah, he stopped saying horrible slanderous things about me and just started attacking the Andrew Yang gang. It was awesome.
Okay. So yeah, this has very, very little to do with the fisc. It's tangential. I'm very ranty tonight. Although I gotta know, what is it about some sort of military service that makes people think they are an authority? I mean, okay, I'm not an authority. I'm not an authority about guns. I honestly don't understand why people listen to me, but apparently they do, so I do my best. But, you know, I don't claim to be much of anything. Meanwhile, you've got people who went and, okay, someone is a SEAL. You know, all right, you'd expect they would have some proficiency with guns. It doesn't make them a gun policy expert. But, I mean, okay, so she flew a helicopter. Great, thank you for your service. This does not make you an expert on firearms. It does not make you an expert on firearms law. And then you got people who, basically, I enlisted for 4 years. You should listen to me. No, we shouldn't. No, we shouldn't. Shut up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where this comes from, where I had some vague professional association with using them in an entirely different context because, you know, war is absolutely different from legal armed self-defense in society because the rules are different. And I don't understand how this appeal to authority actually works. I mean, for crying out loud, it makes more sense for people to listen to doctors, and I don't think doctors really have much of a leg to stand on, but that at least, well, we treat gunshot wounds. Well, okay, at least you're coming from somewhere as opposed to, "Durr, I used them for 4 years." Well, that's really nice. You know what? For 5 years, I commuted into work on the DC Beltway. So that clearly makes me an expert on DC traffic. No, it doesn't.
Yeah. But also, again, gotta add on that the helicopters that Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill flew is rated for the B-57 nuclear
depth charge. It could drop a nuke on a submarine. And like, you guarantee when she's going through flight school for this, they had to have talked about that, because that is so cool. That is like so metal that we have nuclear depth charges. I didn't even know they existed until I just started reading up on the, oh, she was a helicopter pilot. Let me click on the helicopter. I want to see what kind of guns it had, because she's saying I'm worried about an AR-15. And I'm like, does it have, you're worried about the Bushmaster rifle. What about the Bushmaster autocannon? That is a weapon of war. I think it's like a 40 millimeter chain gun. I'm shooting off the hip. I realized we were talking about the Bushmaster, and there's a Bushmaster cannon. Look it up. It's really cool. And it's an actual weapon of war, and it's on like aircraft, and that is a real weapon of war. And if that's what you've got, if you've got a helicopter that poops nuclear bombs, is a 223 varmint rifle that just happens to be black and scary really going to move the needle? And it's one of those things of the, like, come on, this isn't even a goofy appeal to authority, or these like heightened people that are one of those like, yeah, I've been to medical school, or I've got my Juris Doctorate, so therefore I've gone to all this schooling. It was hard work to me to go through, you know, law school. So therefore I should pontificate on other things. And you would just, your high school, you know nothing about anything. Well, no, if we're talking about the CAFE standards and you've, you know, essentially just been doing, you know, civil law at your law group, and this person's a mechanic and actually knows how cars work, maybe he could talk about and has like read every car and driver since he was 6 years old. Maybe he could talk about CAFE standards a little bit more than you could.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of cool but absurd nukes, I think we're going to need to get Logan back on the show to talk about the M29 Davy Crockett.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes, that's very metal. Let's not bury the lead, because Logan will do such a better job. Yes, Logan. Logan, we know you're listening. We'll talk. You got my number. Call me.
Okay. I know this isn't likely to happen, but Logan is so awesome. I would be tickled pink, purple, and polka dotted if he did a recurring segment for us. Just, oh my God.
Oh yeah.
That would be awesome.
Oh yeah.
But he's a busy man. He doesn't have the time. I understand. Yep. I've got to come to terms with that. Mm-hmm. Speaking of terms, if you know anything about guns, or maybe even if you don't, you know that the bullets or the cartridges sometimes have strange names. Why is it sometimes in millimeter? Why is it sometimes in inches? Why do they sometimes have funny little words next to them? Sometimes they're for the manufacturer, sometimes they're for something else. Who knows? Well, David does, and that's what he's going to talk to us about in this week's segment.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. In this segment, I'd like to delve into the convoluted mysteries of cartridge names and specifications. The cartridges we use on a day-to-day basis didn't suddenly appear fully formed. They were developed over many years of trial and error. Some of the most common cartridges today were developed from earlier cartridges of greater or lesser popularity. Over this time, some of the names and designations have drifted. Cartridges have been named for their inventor, for the manufacturer, and for the political or geographical entity they were designed under or adopted by. Generally, there are three main styles for cartridge specifications. They are the British, European, and American naming conventions. The British usually use three-digit decimal inch specifications, such as 303 British, 455 Webley, and 416 Rigby. The European convention is mostly decimal, like 7mm Mauser, 9mm Parabellum, and 6.5mm Swedish. While Americans generally use a two-digit decimal inch style, being the rugged individualist that we are, there's quite a bit of departure from that standard. Consider the 45 ACP, 357 Magnum, and 10mm Auto. As I mentioned earlier, sometimes cartridge names or specifications have drifted over time. Alternatively, names have persisted long after the origin of that cartridge is gone. Consider the family of 38 caliber revolver cartridges, which, as it turns out, are not actually 0.38 inches in diameter. The classic 38 Special has a bullet diameter of 0.357 inches, which is where the 357 Magnum got its name, being a development of the earlier cartridge. But how did the 38 Special get its name? It was developed from the 38 Long Colt, whose bullet was also 0.357 inches in diameter. The 38 Long Colt was in turn developed from the 38 Short Colt, which used a healed bullet 0.375 inches in diameter at its widest portion. A healed bullet is one where the base of the bullet is rebated to fit inside the cartridge case, and the exposed portion of the bullet is the same diameter as the outside of the case. The 22 Long Rifle cartridge is one of the only surviving examples of this style. The 38 Short Colt used a healed bullet because it was introduced in early cartridge conversions of cap-and-ball black powder revolvers. So the 38, in 38 Special, has been passed on from the diameter of the cast balls used in Civil War-era revolvers and has simply stuck around. There are also cartridges that are known under different names for the same chambering, such as the common 9mm being called 9x19, 9mm Luger, 9mm Parabellum, and 9mm NATO. Or the 380 ACP also being known as 380 Auto, 9x17, 9mm Browning, 9mm Kurz, and 9mm Short. This leads us to those cartridges that were developed under one name, but were called another. The ACP in 45 ACP, or 380 ACP, stands for Automatic Colt Pistol. As you might imagine, Smith & Wesson or Savage wouldn't want a competitor's name on their firearm, so 45 ACP became more commonly known in commerce as 45 Auto. One of the first examples of this was the 44 WCF, which stands for Winchester Centerfire, introduced in 1873. Union Metallic Cartridge Company, which later merged with Remington Arms, marketed their version as the 4440. As was common at the time, this stood for a 44 caliber bullet over 40 grains of black powder. The new name became so accepted that even Winchester switched over to calling the cartridge they had developed the 4440 Winchester. 20 years later, a similar story would be repeated with the 30 Winchester centerfire cartridge, being renamed by Marlin the 3030 Smokeless and eventually the 3030 Winchester we still know to this day. Going back to black powder metallic cartridges for a moment, they frequently had a longer nomenclature. The 4570 Government was more formally called the 4570-405, which stood for a 45 caliber bullet weighing 405 grains over 70 grains of black powder. It was also referred to as the 45 Government on the commercial market. There was also a 4570-500 version using a heavier bullet, which was developed for longer effective range, and also a 4555-405 cartridge with a reduced powder load for use in cavalry carbines. All three used the same case and could be fired in the same rifles with varying degrees of accuracy and comfort. Yet another change in naming conventions occurred following the turn of the last century with the introduction of the 3003 Government cartridge, later updated to the 3006 we know to this day. This name referenced the 30 caliber bullet and the year of adoption, 1903 and 1906 respectively. Finally, there are the cartridges that are referenced differently depending on the country of use. For example, while the 11.25mm handgun cartridge has had somewhat limited acceptance in Europe and slightly more in South America, it's still one of the most popular handgun cartridges in the United States. We know it better as the 45 ACP. Compare that to the 7.65mm pistol cartridge, which, while developed by an American, became extremely popular in Europe for use in small pocket pistols. It's more commonly marked 32 ACP here in the US. Alternatively, the 6.5x15mm rimmed is in high demand everywhere and can be readily found all over the world being used for small game hunting and target shooting. Of course, I'm referring to the 22 Long Rifle. There are others that may be less well known, such as the 303 British being called 7.7x56mm rimmed, or 38 Special being called 9x29mm rimmed. A comparison that practically everyone has heard of is the 223 Remington being called 5.56x45mm NATO. These two cartridges are not quite the same and shouldn't be used interchangeably. While the external dimensions of the 223 and 5.56 cases are identical, the 5.56 has a thicker neck to better retain the bullet during automatic fire and is usually loaded to a higher pressure. In rifles chambered for 223, the distance from the end of the chamber to the start of the rifling is shorter to reduce bullet jump and therefore improve accuracy. This is called the lead. 5.56 chambers generally have a longer lead to allow for the thicker neck and higher pressure. Firing a 5.56 cartridge in a 223 chamber can theoretically cause a noticeable increase in pressure and, worst-case scenario, possible damage to the gun and injury to the shooter. The reverse is not true, and a 223 cartridge can be fired safely in any 5.56 marked rifle. For those who would like to delve deeper into the cartridge development and history rabbit hole, I've asked our hosts to provide a link to the website of the Sporting Arms and Ammunition Manufacturers Institute, commonly called SAMI, be included in the show notes, along with links to two books on cartridge specifications and conversions. They are Cartridges of the World by Todd Woodward and Frank Barnes, and The Handloader's Manual of Cartridge Conversions by John and Judy Donnelly. That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me, or suggestions for future segments, or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Weir will make sure I get them. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
Oh, Aaron, I gotta say, this is like one of my like deep geeky roots to the gun culture. I'll say right now, it is in part because of, I've mentioned before, I was anti-gun, and really the thing that really flipped me was when I started reading about the federal assault weapons ban and actually being able to understand everything in it and what is being talked about, and realized that, oh, my uncle's bolt action 30-06 is a perfectly acceptable gun to hunt with, but yet if I used a 7.62x39 or a 5.56 to shoot a deer, it would turn it into hamburger in the middle of the woods, and that's just not sporting. Yeah, so the whole, like, started reading up on cartridges, and I loved the fact that it, you know, the 7.62x51 is the NATO cartridge, and 7.62x39 is the Russian cartridge. And you can clearly see one of them is shorter than the other, and therefore one of them has less room for powder. So therefore it's less powerful. Doesn't always work that way, but it was just a nice way to put things into neat little boxes. I'm a taxonomist at heart.
So one thing that puzzled me, I have no idea why David called it 30-06 when all my life I've heard it 30-06.
Yeah, I think it's because he was reading, again, the weirdness of, you see all these, you know, 30-30 Winchester, and it's the, you know, cartridge and then the powder weight behind it, you know, 45-70, and then suddenly 30-06. Well, what's the 06? Oh, it's a year. It's but it's not 19-06. Nobody ever said that. I wonder actually, if he was just
no. Actually, they did.
Oh,
they did. Yes.
Cool. Well, why didn't we say like 20-06? That would have been way better.
I don't know.
But yeah,
because it was a thing old people did. Maybe, I don't know.
Okay.
Another thing he did, and I'm not saying he's wrong, but it was like really jarring to hear when he called it 223. Mm-hmm. And you know, insert needle scratch sound. No, it's always been 223. It's 223 and 5.56. Why are you saying it that way, David? I don't understand.
That people say it in some ways and in other ways. I think that's one of those ones. Like I was actually I just cut a blooper reel. So for fans of the blooper reel, there's one coming up, and he says carbine. And it's one of those like, oh, I'm so used to carbine. But it's one of those, they're both accepted pronunciations. There's nothing wrong with that. And I have heard people say 223. So
yeah, well, people also say mem. They're still wrong. Shots fired!
I'm hit! I'm going down! But yeah, no, I love the cartridge. And just the whole idea of the, well, if it's 357 Magnum, how come I can shoot a 38 in it without blowing it up? It's because it's 357. So they're confusing and amusing. And then I don't think you didn't even get into like just cartridges of the, yeah, we just named it something different, like the 460 Smith & Wesson Magnum. Yeah, we just decided to call it 46, even though it's 45 like all the other 45s. But you know what? We dare to be different because you can really do whatever you want.
Because we go up to 11.
Yeah. And then there's 38-40, which I don't even understand. It's a 40 caliber revolver round and 38 for reasons. I'm sure someone's going to say something somewhere, but it's just one of those like, that one I just don't even get.
Well, there you go, David. You've got a follow-up segment.
That's right. Dude, give me a whole 10 minutes, a tight 10 minutes on 38-40. Because everyone will love that.
All right, so Weird, I understand that you have an interview with a friend of the show.
That's right. Oh, gosh. I love talking with Lara Smith. I had so much fun talking with her in Phoenix. And I said, you got to be back on the show. And she said, yes, let's do that. And unfortunately, she got really sick. And now was the time that I was able to get her back on the show. So I welcome Lara Smith back to the show from the Liberal Gun Club. I am pleased to welcome again to the show the lovely Lara Smith, who is the national spokesperson for the Liberal Gun Club. How you doing, Lara?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
So we talked, I mean, really, we talked a lot at GRPC. We had breakfast every morning. It was wonderful. And
it was great.
But also, you kind of tossed a little bomb during it. And I told you after you got off the stage, I just went, we got to talk about this on the show because that was brilliant. And then I think you had some sort of horrible wasting illness.
I did. I was so sick. I literally, since GRPC, this is probably like the second week I would have been able to do the show and not sound like a frog. It was really not fun.
Well, I'm glad you're back and your voice sounds lovely as ever. So that is good to hear. I'm always terrified that I'm going to get one of those laryngitis incidents and when I do this show every week. So I'm glad you're back at it. But it's a little bit cool, but not exactly cool, because unfortunately, the subject matter that you were talking about never really dies. So do you want to talk about GRPC and then we'll talk about it in general?
Yeah, so GRPC overall was great. I had a really good time. It's always fun to have that audience and that platform being me, because no one really expects me and several of us now to be there. Except for the couple hundred people in the audience who know us and are like, oh yeah, her again. but you know, generally you get 1,000 people and 800 of them are like, whoa, wait, what? A liberal gun owner? Who? And so that's always fun. And I got to do AmCon this year, which was great as well. But kind of typical as we get on the stage, somebody who's running for the board of directors, who used to be on the board of directors for the NRA, who who is almost the definition of okay boomer, gets up and says, and you know, so nice to see all the women in their audience here supporting their men. And it was just, you could hear the kind of intake of breath. And right after that happens, I think I was the next woman who was going on stage. And so kind of out in the, kind of outside of the conference room, out in the area, people were coming up to me and saying, what are you going to say? What are you going to say to him? And I said, I don't know. That wasn't part of my speech. I don't know what I'm going to say. You know, I'll go up and say something. And as part of my speech, you know, I pointed out that my husband couldn't be there supporting me because he was home taking care of the kids. But it's endemic in the gun world. This racism is just absolutely endemic in the gun world. And it's so not remotely surprising to me to see it. You know, it was like, oh, huh, again. It's endemic in a lot of our world, being a professional woman. You know, I can tell you, I'm an attorney, and I can tell you, I don't know, hundreds of women attorneys I know have stories of going into court and having the bailiff say, oh, are you the court reporter? Oh, are you the paralegal? No, that's why I'm signing in as the attorney. You know, it just happens. Stuff like this happens all the time, and it's so frustrating. But you would think in this world where women are the largest growing segment of the industry, where we have been for a while, where women are showing up and working, where, for goodness sakes, Daniel's Defense is owned by a woman, you would think that people would know not to do this. And they don't. And see, this cough, I still have it. They don't seem to know that it's not that shocking that women are there speaking. You know, we've been doing this a long time now. We're a big part of the industry. You know, Robin Sandoval with A Girl and a Gun, Diana Muller with DC Project. You know, these are, not to mention Becky Yackley, for goodness sakes. You know, I mean, all these people are well-known, important parts of our industry. And to get up and say, hey, it's nice for you to be supporting your men, that's not helpful.
Yeah. Also, I will add that true story, just before we were leaving for GRPC, my wife has been having a very, very, very busy year. And my wife is, she's the primary breadwinner of our house. And I am a stay-at-home dad because that makes the absolute most sense for our family. And like literally things were blowing up as I was packing my bags to go. And I looked at her and I said, do you want me to cancel? I can stay home. Like we can figure this out. But like, if you absolutely need me here instead of, you know, instead of over there, I can do this. Because yeah, no, the family dynamic is changing so rapidly to be so entrenched in that really 1950s sort of, boomer, that boomer mindset is just so toxic.
It really is. And it so doesn't really reflect what's happening in the industry and the world. You know, there was the 2A rally and a huge number of the speakers were women. I mean, that's the reality of this world, much less, you know, the rest of the US. But to see kind of this, well, the women stay home and take care of their men idea, you know, we're the ones spending the money, much less earning the money. You know, I mean, we're spending it because we earn it. It's ours. And we're the ones out there driving a lot of the innovation in the industry. Hey, you know, we need better carry products because these terrible holsters don't fit us and we can't carry if you don't do something new. Hey, you need to redesign grips to be more ergonomic because they don't fit our hands. Hey, why don't you work on slide design so that they rack easily when you literally have physical differences in how the muscles in your hands are working. Hey, why don't you design a shotgun for the musculature of a woman's shoulder? Cesar Guarini has an entire line of women's shotguns. They're not women's shotguns because they're pretty. They're women's shotguns because they're designed for a person who's 5'4 with a different proportion of their shoulder and chest. You know, that in their arms. I mean, that's how they're designed. They're not designed, and it's not that they're not designing for, you know, that they're designing them to be cute. They're great. But then you have the whole thing about the stuff that's cute. The terribly made stuff that's pink. Well, women will like it because it's pink. No. You know, I mean, I like pretty guns. None of my guns are pink. But I don't like them because they're pretty. I like them because they're good equipment. You know, I'm not going to buy a piece of junk pink shotgun just because it's pink. I'm going to buy, you know, a Cesar Guarini because it's an amazing piece of equipment that also happened to be well designed for me.
Yeah. Actually, interestingly enough, my wife is very much a girly girl in that sense of the, I mean, I'm amazed when she brings something home that is not purple. And I've said to her, oh yeah, wouldn't you want a purple gun? And she's like, no, guns need to be black or they need to be silver. End of story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have a blue AR, so I can't say that. But, you know, I also have a blue AR from a company that will design your AR in pretty much any color there is. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't like guns that look like toys. Mm-hmm. And my AR definitely doesn't look like a toy. I don't want it to be cute and girly. And for God's sakes, if you're going to make it pink, don't then make it a piece of junk. Yeah. That is getting better. You know, but for a while there were a bunch of manufacturers who were like, oh, we can, you know, put pink on our worst product and that's perfect for men, or perfect for women. And really what they were marketing it for was for men to buy for their wives. Mm-hmm. And I get this question a lot, you know, hey, my wife doesn't like guns. She doesn't shoot. What gun should I buy her? I'm thinking about a Charter Arms revolver. Is it any good? Okay. So first of all, no. and it's not good, not because it's a Charter Arms, but because you don't have any idea what she likes to shoot. And I will tell you that almost no novice shooters like snubby revolvers, and certainly not lightweight ones. What should you buy your wife? You should buy her a good set of instruction with a certified instructor that you don't go to. And then you should, if you want to, you or the instructor or her friend or whoever, go rent some guns and see what she likes to shoot, and then buy her what she wants. You know, that's my Christmas shopping advice of, you know, and if your wife doesn't want to shoot, don't buy her a gun. Mm-hmm. We're allowed to make that choice too.
Yeah. And actually, I wonder, do you know if there are any training roster numbers? Because unfortunately, I live in Massachusetts, and of course, I'm talking to you in California, where we have mandated training. But I've got to imagine the one thing that I always hear about from instructors is that the big issue with men is they come into the class already knowing everything. Of course, we know how true that is. And the issue with and women tend to be much better students because they come in ready to learn. And I've got to wonder on how many women are taking classes, especially in places that aren't required. Like, actually, I know my my cousin up in Maine, his wife has been to Tatiana Whitlock's class. I think she's been twice to train with Tatiana Whitlock. And I don't think my cousin's been yet. So there's something to be said about that. Is a husband and wife, and the husband's a bit of a gun nut. The wife is okay. I get it. You know, my cousin was on the road a lot. So she was home alone with the kids a lot more. And he's just like, yeah, you might want to be able to protect something, especially they're out in the woods of Maine. So yeah. So she was like, yeah, I want to take a training class, but yet the dude, not so much unless it's mandated. So I don't know how true that is, but it seems like that's something I see a lot, is that women are a lot more hungry for training as well.
I think in the gun world, nearly every woman I know who shoots takes classes, and that's not true of the men. I think in our house that was true. Excuse me. My husband learned to shoot in the military, and that was his training. You know, I don't need to take another class. I'm not doing these other things. And I was like, yeah, let's go take some classes. So, anecdotally, I don't know how it breaks down. I certainly think more men than women are still taking classes overall. In other words, if you look at the classes, you see more men. But I think as far as self-defense, I think when women do come into the industry, I think they, at an earlier stage of coming into the industry, for women who aren't interested in competition, are probably training more. But I don't have any hard numbers on it. And, you know, that's just anecdotally from what I'm seeing.
Yeah. And also, there's training and there's training. I've got to imagine the shooting an AR from a helicopter and going down a static line, training from an ex-Navy SEAL. I think we all know that the skills you're going to learn in that class really aren't that practical, but it might be fun. And I would argue, I think there's a whole lot more dudes doing Yahoo jumping out of the helicopter than there are ladies. You guys do live
probably
a lot longer
than
us.
I have to say, I've gone heli gunning.
Ooh,
I've done heli gunning. I mean, I've shot the AR out of the helicopter. It's super fun. I mean, I think more women should be doing that because I think it's fun. But yeah, no, rappelling out of the helicopter, not so interested. I like staying in the helicopter and shooting.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's one of the most incredibly fun things to do. It really is great. And I think that I think you are seeing new structures in classes. I think you're seeing new structures and training. I think things like A Girl and a Gun and Tatiana, who's amazing, and all kinds of women, you're seeing classes specifically for women. You're seeing a lot more acceptance of, hey, it's okay to train these beginning shooters, and we're not going to train them as yahoos, and we're not going to make fun of them for not having ever done this before. And I think that overall is a real positive in the industry. And so I do think there's been influence from this growth of women in the industry. And now, gosh, it's probably been close to 10 years that's true, right? Mm-hmm. That we're the largest growing segment. And when you see that, you know, now that we've had a decade and we're kind of coming out of that emerging stage into a established growth stage, I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for our industry. Don't discount the largest growing segment in the industry and tell us we're there because we're supporting our men, because we're not. And the reason we're there is because we're good at it. We enjoy it. We respect our rights to, a lot of it goes to feminism and to bodily autonomy. We have the right to defend our bodies how we see fit. And if that's part of that is owning a gun and learning and training self-defense with a weapon, you know, don't tell us we're doing it to support our guys. We're not. We're doing it to support ourselves.
Well, thank you so much for saying it, Lara. I think we need more perspective from people like you and people from the Liberal Gun Club to know that, no, not all liberals are after our guns, and that, yes, you guys have a Second Amendment right as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, I mean, even to be fair, even in my group, I can't tell you the number of times I'm writing something or moderating one of our boards and a guy says, well, who are you? I'm going to go get the leadership. And I'm like, I am the leadership. Like, yeah, I know I'm a woman, but I'm still the leadership. I mean, I'm one of very, very few women in this industry who is a leader in an organization that is not strictly a women's organization. There are others, but there's not, and they do great jobs. You know, Tatiana, a whole bunch of people, I'm not discounting that, but that is still new. And you know, don't be surprised when women are taking leadership roles in our industry, you know, even if it's not a women's gun club. You know, we're still a smaller number compared to men, but we're there. And you know, don't be surprised by that. That's how this industry, it's one of the big ways the industry is going to change.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Lara. That was awesome.
Thank you for having me.
It's always good to have Lara back on the show. And I got to say, yeah, this is just one of those issues that I think is going to always keep popping up, especially, yeah, the crappiest guns in pink. And I've realized, yeah, it is probably because make them really cheap. That way people will buy them or more will be more likely to buy them.
So here's the thing. I understand the point or the points Lara makes. I don't necessarily disagree with them. I just had a hard time getting worked up over this.
Yeah, I could see that, but I could also see that. I think the takeaway is one must be wary that, I mean, people are bothered by different things. And so, you know, someone looks at me and says, hey, weird, you put on a bunch of weight. I'm it's really not going to move my needle all that much. But there's lots of other people out there say, hey, you put on a bunch of weight and you're going to ruin their day.
Yeah.
And so there are different things that people are going to be more sensitive to. And especially with women are the largest growing demographic within the shooting industry. Let's not ruin a good thing. We're getting a whole lot of allies every single day. So let's welcome them in rather than get them to put one foot in the door and go, oh, gross, and then walk out.
You know, I completely understand that, and I even agree with it. I just, maybe it's just because I have grown up around very conservative people with very conservative parents all my life. It just, for whatever reason, it didn't register with me. And it was just, eh. I guess maybe it's because I've got so many people taking things personally on me that if they aren't actually singling me out, I guess I don't go looking for trouble. And that's not to say that Lara's feelings aren't valid. It's just I feel like I don't have a fight in this dog. I feel like I don't have a dog in this fight, and maybe I should, but there are other hills I want to die on, and I'm not really invested in this, and I realize it sounds horrible and unsupportive, and she has every right to feel the way she feels, and I'm not going to tell her she's wrong. I'm just going, oh, okay, well, you do you.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that makes me a bad host, a bad friend, a bad queer supporter, but I don't know. I'm in a really weird place about this. Don't hate me, Lara.
Yeah, I think it's just a good thing to keep in mind, and we'll leave it at that. Maybe that feeling is valid for you as well. Is the I don't see the point in that, but there are other people that do see the point in it. And all right, there's one thing to be someone who goes up to every single person you see and make sure you know what their pronouns are. And I would argue that for some people, if I go up to you, oh, hi, Aaron, how are you doing? By the way, what are the pronouns you would prefer to use? You would be, oh, well, I fully understand that, and I'm flattered by you making that effort and going through. Meanwhile, if someone says, oh, hi, weird, how are you doing? What are the pronouns that you use? Why are you asking me about my pronouns? Like, I'm a 6-foot dude with a beard, and I'm, you can use the male ones. Honestly, you can use the female ones. Doesn't hurt my feelings. Whatever you want to do, you do you. Why are we wasting time talking about this?
When we could be talking about revolvers.
That's right. Or the weather.
What kind of revolvers to carry in inclement weather? Mm-hmm. Like wicked pisser nor'easters.
Where were we? There was a show back there somewhere.
Where were we, Weird? Let me help you with that. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcaliberspodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP magdubs.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts and share the shows with your friends, both online and off. You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weirdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
Yeah, you know where to find me. It's you've heard this all before. Lurking, rhythming, blue collar, prepping, pink pistol, playing the sword, blah, 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 blah. So hey, cool things that I'm thinking of now. I've been invited to Life, the Universe, and Everything Symposium in Utah again next year. So you can find me there in the 13th through the 15th of February. Hope to see you there. I'm a panelist on three panels, and I'm moderating the fourth. someone's going to be sorry. I don't know if it's going to be me or them. And then it looks like I don't want to jinx it, but I might be giving a speech at the convention for the Libertarian Party of Florida the next week. So I'm going to be really, really busy in February. Why am I telling you about this in November? I have no idea. I'm full of rambling tonight.
So you can get a running start to get yourself some Aaron Paulette action.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you are hearing currently the lovely music by Nate Spencer. Thank you so much, Nate.
I had a really cool thing set up, and it absolutely doesn't apply anymore because Weird gets me wound up like no one's business. But you know what? I'm going to do it anyway because I can't think of anything better. So I've got to get into character here for this. He's manic. I'm depressive. Our pathologies are assorted, and so's our podcast. Good night.
Good night, everybody.